Good morning, I'm Philip Pong, and welcome to another edition of the Best of Humble and Fred Jukebox. It's wonderful content for you and me, brought to you by The Chambers Plan, Gig Sky, Spearhead Brewing Company, The Retirement Sherpa, FYI Music News, Strain Print, and HomegrownKits.ca. On this edition of the show, we have a collection of segments and interviews that are inquisitive and quite fascinating for you and I. And we're going to start with the Humble and Fred Miscellaneous Segment. I call it Miscellaneous Segments because they are segments from our timeless archive featuring chats that you and I have enjoyed and laughed at, which is why I'm presenting it to you. On today's edition, we're going to hear about sensible car shopping. Howard was involved in a number of car accidents that were not his fault. In this edition, we're going to hear about getting a new car and what to find, as well as being older than dirt and a certain obsession with soda water.
You're very thorough when it comes to spending money, and I respect it. Mm-hmm. I think it's cool. I'm not, because I'm not a grown-up. You are, and that's why I'm going to avail myself of your acumen when it comes to looking at the... I just want to get a landscape. I know you'll tell me, okay, this is good value. Mm-hmm. 18.5 is good value for this car, mm-hmm. because I don't know what... I mean, I'm looking 2015, 2016,
mm-hmm.
you know?
But see, Howard, there's another thing, and of course I'm going to help you without a doubt, but that's another thing about the new system of car purchasing online. I don't have to tell you it's good value. We'll see that. It will be displayed to us through the profile of the car and the pricing.
Yeah.
Because you just compare it.
Yeah, but without you, I mean, you've bought cars for $15,000 to $25,000. Mm-hmm. I, unfortunately, don't have much experience in that.
Right.
And I haven't bought one of these cars before. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to it because, just as I said the other day, you know, if you have I had a 2011 car for 5 years, mm-hmm. and the technology in it, even in 2011, mm-hmm. had nothing in it.
Yes.
It didn't even have satellite radio.
Right.
I had to get a aftermarket receiver.
Right.
I had to get an aftermarket Bluetooth piece of...
Right.
I didn't even have Bluetooth built into my car. Where am I? The dark
ages? No, it's fantastic. You're driving along, and you're doing the whole car fills with the phone, the sound of the phone. Well, you know, you've had it in this.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, anyone that's had a conversation with me on my old system, mm-hmm. it's horrible. It's noisy. I'm yelling.
That's all you hear. Yeah, when you call me on the road, it's like, I'm like, how are you, Howard?
By the way,
even in it's simple, even Delise can use hers in her new vehicle.
Yeah.
And when she calls me, I can actually hear her. Even her little tiny doll voice somehow is picked That's up right. and amplified.
It is.
That I can actually hear it. In fact, sometimes mm-hmm. when she's at home and I can't hear her speaking, like from across the room, I ask her to go out and get in her car and phone me.
Oh, he does.
It seems to amplify her voice.
Sometimes he gives her one of those mini speaker things.
Mega horn.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Bullhorn. I was out for dinner with her last week. I couldn't hear a word. She was across the table from me, and all I could hear was this tiny sound, almost like a meadow squirrel, and then just hearts coming out of her mouth. You know when you like something, when somebody's doing a Facebook Live thing, and all
you see is a wave of hearts.
That's what, with a doll. All you see is love coming out of her mouth. And you?
No, I know.
It's like, you know, steam coming off. Phil, speaking of Phil, update, Phil's mom's not going to China today. That's been canceled.
What happened to the quiz you were going to ask me?
Oh, right. Yeah, sorry. Because I forgot. Okay, we'll get Phil's update in a minute. Yeah. First, the quiz.
What's the quiz? Did Patrick Brown take out his lumber in that bedroom or not?
He pee-peed that PC.
Mm-hmm. This is the Are You Older Than Dirt quiz. Phil, settle down.
Oh, dear.
So I guess the idea is I'm going to ask you a series of questions if you remember these things, and then we will score you, and if you get a high score, you're older than dirt. Are you ready?
Surely.
Hang on a second. I have to get some game show.
Can I get Dandy to answer for me if I can?
Listen.
Well, I'm kidding.
Dandy Mag, see him on Degrassi.
Oh, hold on a second. Let's see. Here we go. Oh, here we go. Game show. Okay, these are horrible.
Is it just an album called Game Show?
Oh, God. Anyway, here we go.
I don't remember that song.
Okay, here it is. Are You Older Than Dirt? Fred, where'd it go? Now I can't find. Oh, here we go. Do you remember Blackjack chewing gum?
Yes. Okay. Loved it.
Hold on. I remember that. It was licorice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yes. So that's one.
It was very good. I loved it.
This is another one I remember.
Taste went away quickly.
Yeah, amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Wax Coke-shaped bottles with colored sugar water.
Yes. Horrid.
Horrid.
Mm-hmm.
For you people who don't know what we're talking about, they were like thick, crappy wax.
Mm-hmm.
And inside they had this sugary juice.
Liquid. Yes.
Liquid. Okay, so that's two.
Remember that. Yes. Vividly, actually.
Here's one I don't remember. Butch wax.
No, what is that?
Don't know.
Butch wax?
Don't know.
Nope.
Why don't you ask the premier? Anyway, so that's a horrible, horrible joke, Phil. I'm sorry you made me make it. Candy cigarettes, yes. Mm-hmm. We remember those.
Yeah. And cigars. Remember the black licorice ones with the red ends for the cigars?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and well, yeah, for sure. Uh-huh. The cigars were my favorite because you had more candy on the end, of them. This is one I don't...
They were Popeye, usually, the cigarettes.
Yes, they were.
Yeah.
Here's one I don't remember, but I think you might. Soda pop machines with glass bottles in them.
Yes.
Okay, see, I don't remember those.
I remember vending machines with paper cups that came down.
Yeah, you said that.
Yeah.
Where you would shoot the liquid out.
Yeah.
I've seen those where you'll get like a coffee machine.
Yes, yes, yes. And have like your average hospital come in with tea and stuff.
Do you remember Howdy Doody?
You know what? Only after the fact, not when it was current. That's 50s, isn't it?
Yeah.
He was sort of the first television sort of...
Kid showy.
Yeah. No, I don't.
I don't remember Howdy Doody either.
Again, I only through history.
What about Runny Doody, his cousin? this one I remember. Do you remember restaurants with tableside jukeboxes?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah. Okay. In fact, there was a bit of renaissance with that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, it's all you hipsters can say, yeah, well, they're in some of the restaurants. But when we were kids, they were in all the restaurants.
Common. Yeah, it was common, yeah.
This is another one. Home milk delivery with glass bottles.
Yeah.
Glass bottles.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, I do.
Same with me.
I remember. And we used to have our bread delivered as well.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
That I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember the milkman delivered the milk.
You know, and there was this thing. There was this thing in Scarborough or in Toronto back in the 60s. It was called Chip King. And they delivered potato chips or cheesies or whatever. It was this whole snack food thing.
No way.
Called Chip King. And they would deliver, like, potato chips to your house.
Like in a crate or in some
bags? No, in a big round tin.
Wow.
Now, this is something I remember, but you probably didn't have here in the big city. Is a party telephone line. Do you guys know what that is?
Yes.
Yeah. Danny, just say yes or no. Don't any more. No, you don't.
No, we never did.
When I lived in Moose Jaw, when I moved out of my parents' home, I moved out in the country because I was boarding some horses.
Mm-hmm.
And in the country house I stayed at, it was a party line.
So there you go. Seven.
Yeah, no, I've never. I had heard about them, but no.
You know what it is? So basically, you get on the line, a community area would you'd share a line.
Right.
And you'd have to get on it. First of all, you could get on it and listen to any conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It was absurd.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd get on it to make sure it was clear, and then you'd make your call.
Mm-hmm.
Here's one. This one I don't remember. Do you remember newsreels before movies? I don't.
No.
Okay. 45 RPM records, yes.
Yes.
Okay, so we're both seven.
With the centerpiece?
Yes.
Why did they have to have a centerpiece? Why didn't they just make it a little hole like an album on a 45?
That I don't
know.
When
you think about that.
I don't know.
It was ridiculous.
It was ridiculous. And they had to have adapters.
Yeah. Maybe to sell adapters.
PF flyers.
Yes, had them.
What are they?
Black running shoes.
Never heard of them.
They were running shoes and then a big seal sort of on the ankle that said PF flyer.
Yeah. This I remember, carrying a metal lunchbox when I went to work in the diamond mines outside of Moose Jaw. I don't really remember it, but I'm assuming we had them. They were square. They had the Flintstones on them.
Aww.
I never had one.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I remember them, but
drive-in movie theaters. Yes, in fact, where I used to live in Oakville was one of two of the final drive-ins in the GTA.
There was one in right in my neighborhood in Scarborough called the Scarborough Drive-In Theater.
Hmm. Seriously?
Oh yeah, right with 2 minutes from my house.
Oh, yeah.
Well, people in the West End will know that number 5 drive-in, way out there on 9th Line. Mm-hmm. That's one of the last ones that you, and it's still there.
In fact, where the Scarborough Drive-In movie theater was, just up the road from there now is Mike Myers Boulevard or whatever, a street they named after Mike Myers. Yeah.
Do you remember this show?
Yes.
Okay.
Loved it. Andy right Mayberry. On.
Andy Mayberry.
Andy Griffith Show, they called it as
That's
well.
That's what it was called. There was a spinoff. Andy, what's your name? Danny says there's a spinoff.
Yeah, Mayberry RFD. And and Gomer Pyle, USMC. Because Gomer started on this show. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had, it was, and he was so popular, they had to spin him off. And then it turned out that he... okay, so there you go. We're sort of around the same. I have 10, you have 9. Do you remember soda fountains?
Meaning what?
I don't really know.
Are you talking about like soda jerks where there are men who or women who soda give fountains. You your serve you your soda for you?
In Scarborough, there was a place on Kennedy Road called Rutherford's Dairy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those old time, you'd go in there for a milkshake, you know, with the green machines. And I think they had a soda fountain there, too.
There was a Zellers.
For floats.
This will tell you how old I am. There was a Zellers in Moose Jaw. Mm-hmm. And my mother would take me to Zellers. And we would eat at the counter. And I would assume they had a soda fountain. I've seen them. Well, according to this thing, we're not older than dirt, but we're between 6 and 15. You're getting there. We're close.
Why? We just about nailed everything.
Now we're 16 to 20. If you got 16 to 20, you're older than dirt.
So we're more like topsoil or clay, not dirt per se.
We're older than a potted plant.
This is Humble and Fred.
There's more to this very fun, timeless, miscellaneous segment of The Best of Humble and Fred. More chats and laughs on the way. I'm Philip Hong on The Best of Humble and Fred on air and online. Thank you for listening. We first have a couple of very important messages.
Let's talk about strain prep.
Yes, why don't we do that?
Use cannabis better with the free Strain Prep Companion app. It'll help you learn how much more rewarding and beneficial your experience with cannabis can be. You know, there are currently thousands of strains available, and everyone possesses or processes cannabis differently. That's why they created StrainPrint, the app. Now, the app allows you to easily track and journal your cannabis experience to better understand what the best strains are for you. Reach optimal symptom relief and live your best life. Use the StrainPrint app. And again, it's free, 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 free.
Amaze.
Mm-hmm.
This is Humble and Fred.
Welcome back. The Best of Humble and Fred. Always on air. Always on. Free and easy, as always. I'm Philip Hong. Thank you very much for listening. I'm studio manager and librarian for The Best of Humble and Fred. I basically present to you some of the most interesting moments of our show in the past 7 years of this incarnation. And so we're going to continue on with the Humble and Fred miscellaneous segment. In this chat, we're going to hear about an obsession with soda water and actors and acting.
Got a soda stream. I want to talk about that. That was amazing. Yes. Got that yesterday.
You've just entered the world?
Yeah.
Oh, come on. Yes. Soda stream.
I just soda streamed out of myself yesterday.
I'm sure you did.
Do I have to replace the tank already? Or
well, do you have one?
I've had one, yeah. Oh, I am on that soda stream train.
I just got four flavors. What are your favorite flavors?
Like a thimble full of palm juice.
Oh, yeah?
It's like a little cocktail. Thimble, like a little bit of palm, like that, you know, that big palm. You know palm juice?
No.
What? It's like a... It looks like an hourglass.
Oh, yes.
Do you know what I mean?
P-O-M-M.
Like P-O-M, yeah.
P-O-M, yeah. Yeah.
P-O-M.
And it's like they have blueberry palm and cherry palm.
So, but you thought he, Phil is your name, right?
Yes, my name is Phil.
Phil bought me some...
Syrups.
Yes,
syrups. Yes, little... Did you say syrup or
syrup? Syrups.
Syrup.
So I've got some of those. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try them out.
I don't really do that.
No?
I just make sparkling water and throw...
And then
like
just throw in different juices, I threw
in a lime. The end.
Okay. Well, I made it... I got it yesterday. Phil picked it up. And then I did 1 liter of carbonated soda water, yes. Which I drink... You know, and it's funny because I spoke to a GFR girlfriend, Rachel.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And she also said... I said, hey, I got a soda stream. She goes, you know what? I was thinking the other day, you should have a soda stream.
Yeah, if you drink club soda all
the time,
then you got to get a soda stream.
Well, it's all I drink.
Yeah.
And I throw different things in. I've never thought of that. The palm.
It's game changer. Palm and a bit of lime. Telling you. Game changer.
That is, by the way, that has become one of my favorite phrases of 2018.
What
people, people are saying that all the time now. I love that.
Mine
that's
is
a game changer.
Mine is low-hanging fruit. Everyone says, oh, low-hanging fruit now. That's what everyone, talking about comedy, they'll say, oh, yeah, well,
no,
low-hanging fruit. That, that never was said until this year. Also, when something's forward, like that's very pomegranate forward.
Oh, right.
That's something
that
you hear a lot.
Is low-hanging fruit a game changer?
Yes. Can be.
Well,
can
anyway, be. The game has changed upstairs in SodaStream land.
Mm-hmm. It's forwarded.
I have a question, though. I made the SodaStream soda after the show yesterday. When I got home yesterday afternoon, I thought, ooh, because I had put it in the Frigidaire. That's what we used to call it back in the
1900s.
The Whirlpool.
From Sears?
Back in the, yes.
That's
back in the 1960s.
Yeah.
Anyway, I opened my Frigidaire, or my icebox.
Icebox.
And I know this is stupid, so I'm just going to say it, though. I was fascinated by, I opened the SodaStream container, poured myself some delicious soda water that I had created myself. And then when I came back later to get more of it, I the thing was still carbonated.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
How has it continued to be carbonated once you open it?
Because it was fresh. Because whenever you buy carbonated drinks, like at a supermarket, it was carbonated maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, basically. So
yeah, but usually when you open it, it gets flat.
Right, right. But because you carbonated, like, today, in, on the same day,
great.
You'll still have the bubbles.
There's how a, soon before a, it goes flat?
Same as, like, a bottle of
like a couple
Coke
days
or whatever. Yeah, yeah, yeah a couple yeah. days. There's a little rubber stopper thing, so you got to make sure you don't lose that. I learned that the hard way.
The rubber stopper on the container?
Yeah, on the cap. When you open it up, you'll look
I
in
see.
The cap,
yeah, yeah.
And there's a little rubber thing. If that's gone, then it's not as effective. Mm-hmm. I learned that.
I'm so late to the SodaStream party.
So late to the... Because I was doing promo work when I got into that, and that's been kind of a long time now. It predates my Humble and Fred time.
You know, sitting across from you in this direction, I really like it, actually. Because usually you're over here
yes.
my left. But yes. because I'm looking at you straight on, I have a new... I don't know, there's just a new feeling of warmth.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's nice.
I know
nice.
You have a soft... Speaking of warm, I know you have a soft spot for my daughters, the younger one especially.
I was
your little
just
buddy.
Watching her old Walmart...
Her old Walmart commercial she posted.
Come on.
You see, there's an interesting thing, because Spenny, who... she posted something. She had done a Walmart TV commercial with one of your friends.
Yeah, with Aurora. Yeah, who's been here before.
Yeah, and... she posted it, and it's weird because my ex-wife comments on it.
I saw that.
And I did the least. I did an emoji or something. I did a thumbs up
you
or
did
a smile.
Thumbs up. You didn't do a crying face.
You didn't do a sad face.
Sad face bender yesterday.
That's really funny. What happened to Howard on he went on a sad face emoji
Howard's
bender.
Crying on everyone's
everything
statuses.
Is crying. Maybe that should be my new inside joke to myself. I just put sad face on anything.
I've got a baby, sad face.
Sad face.
It's my birthday,
see
sad face.
Changes, life is- changes your algorithm. Like, you know what I mean? Maybe things, depression counseling will start coming up.
Like it already hasn't.
Yeah, right.
I just thought it was odd, and I'm going to talk to when I see or talk to Randy next. You know, I just think it's weird when her mother, like, comments on her post because she could just talk to her at breakfast.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, let me tell you. So Marco, my husband, has insomnia. I think we know this, and because he has a podcast called The Insomnia Project. Mm-hmm. There's the plug. Anyway, he. I got up and I was up a little earlier than the norm for this appearance, and I look at my phone because that's what I do, and it said something about, well, the good thing about having insomnia, and it was like 1 hour ago he had posted. I'm like, where have you been? I thought you were sleeping with me this whole time. I get up, you know, at 5 in the morning, and then there's a post from him from like 4 in the morning. So it's like Facebook told me that my
husband,
who was in my
yeah,
bed.
Yeah, you know, I know. Well, and again, I love my ex. She's a sweetie, and I'm not saying she shouldn't comment. It just seems odd. We're all in the same family,
and when you share a house together, then it gets weird. But that's what I'm. Yeah, it's my
Anyway, so Spenny was in this commercial, and her post was you know, talk about peaking in high school. It's the only spot she's ever done.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Yeah, it's the only commercial she's ever booked.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah,
and when I saw it, I was like, "Oh, I see why she booked it." Because she's like, she does the best eye roll thing. I'm like, Mom.
No, no, she's a,
so great.
She was born to sass. I bring her up too because, you know, she's a, she's really funny. Spencer and I, we're in a really good spot, and our relationship is, you know, better now than it was there for a while. Mm-hmm. And I think I've mentioned it. It was tough. There was a couple tough years where, you know, she was going through a lot of stuff of being a, you know, a late teen, young woman, you know, fractured family, all this stuff. It was kind of tough.
There's a, you're both going through a lot.
Right.
You know,
and,
really.
And these days, it's really a lot of fun. It's mostly just silly phone calls. Well, I get a call from her yet. These are the kind of calls I get. Daddy, I go, hi, Spenny, what's up? She goes, my neck hurts.
Oh.
That was the call. I go,
Daddy, my neck hurts.
Daddy.
I need a tattoo.
Daddy, my neck hurts. This was at 5:30 yesterday afternoon, and I was at the golf course, you know, which I do occasionally.
Once in a while.
And I said, honey, what's up? She goes, did you get my text? Like, no, I hadn't seen it. And the text was, my neck hurts.
And the follow-up call was
the follow-up, just to see if I saw the text. And I said, well, honey, I'm sorry to hear that. What would you like me to do? She goes, I just want you to know. I said, well, where are you? She goes, I'm in a car. I go, okay, well, then drive to some place where they can help you with your neck. And you know, the other day, you know, she calls me. And, you know, this is the call I get. My neck hurts. My shoulder's sore. Anyway, she basically calls me when she needs a ride somewhere or she needs advice about a pain in her body.
Aww.
I know. I'm actually seeing her and her sister, Charlie Glassman, this evening for a hipster dinner somewhere.
Where are you guys?
Somewhere in the Liberty Village, you know?
That's
something
nice.
Like that. That's near everybody.
That's nice.
I actually met a listener yesterday who was my host at this great golf course in Toronto. He invited me to play, and his name is Daryl Lucas. He's a great guy. And just we had a great day, and it couldn't have been nicer. And he is a little younger than me, but they had kids later in life, a kid later in life. And he has a 6-year-old daughter whose name is Charlie as well, yes.
And not short for anything?
Nope, not short for anything. Mm-hmm. And he had his golf balls. Mm-hmm. There's a promotion with this company where you can get anything you want written on the ball. Mm-hmm. And he had Charlie's dad written on the ball. And so I took a picture of it. And I sent it to Charlie and Spencer, but I wrote in, you know, you could write on a picture, I said, and Spenny's dad, too. You know, this she wouldn't.
Photoshop.
This she wouldn't feel.
Way to feel loved. Also you.
And my neck hurts.
My heart hurts.
Talk about a little yenta in training.
Daddy.
Hello, father. Listen, dad, it's Spencer. My neck hurts. What? You know,
I miss her. I miss working with her, actually.
And I know this is a stereotype, but this is a, what is with Jewish women? They will, you think about Jewish women, this is John Mulaney's bit, but it's true. They will tell you exactly how they feel all the time.
Kind of love it.
It's good because you always know where you stand.
Yeah.
Hi, sweetie. What's up? My neck hurts.
I worked with this old actress who was Jewish. Many, many moons ago, and I was auditioning for Lord of the Rings, the musical or whatever that was.
I'm sorry. I missed that one.
Anyway, and she said to me in this dressing room full of like 30 people, you're auditioning for that? I thought they were only auditioning for pretty girls. And everyone in the dressing room was horrified. I was totally on the same page with it. I was like, no, I know, I know, no. I'm like the funny troll or whatever. Like,
I'm sorry, I thought they were only auditioning pretty girls.
Gloria Valentine was her name. That's her stage name. I don't know her.
Women are so cruel.
This is Humble and Fred.
Coming up, we've got interviews and news and views that are all yours. You're listening to the best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Pong. We're on air, online, free and easy, and always, always for you, the listener.
Humble and Fred, Humble and Fred, I don't know.
Whatever!
Welcome back. You're listening to the best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Hong, and this series is called the Humble and Fred Jukebox because we are featuring some great moments of the show and some interviews along with it. And so in this segment of the best of Humble and Fred, there are very special guests in our studio. In fact, this is from earlier this year. We have a lot of great musicians, Canadian legends who happen to grace our studios. And so we're in this case, we've got the Trues, and this is their second visit on the best of Humble and Fred.
Please welcome back to our program, Colin and John Angus.
The Trues! The Trues! The Trues!
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. We're just talking about the last time, I guess Colin was here, John Angus was like, I don't do that.
I just had a baby, I think, like a week, within weeks. I had to not do a lot of press on the last album.
So now you have a four-year-old.
Now I have another baby. I put out babies and albums at the same time, it seems.
Well, wow. That's not a bad thing.
Yeah, it's not so bad.
So welcome to the show. We're Humble and Fred. Colin, I'm sure, has told you so much about us. Like, hey, you're going to have a great time.
Biggest podcast in Canadian history.
Canadian mm-hmm. history.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
So that like seven whole downloads a week or something like
hey,
that?
Fella.
Hey, fella.
Hey, fella.
We've been number one in Canada, too.
Easy,
I know.
Yeah, you know, exactly. You know what that's like. Yeah.
I know what that means.
Have you been? Have
yeah,
you, like,
we've been
downloads?
Number one on the charts, the radio charts, cool. and the sales charts. We've been in the top 10 a bunch. I'm not trying. I'm just
no. I know exactly though.
You guys are supposed, you know, you're supposed to be humble.
Well, and we are, but you know, sometimes we err too much on the side of being
humility.
Canadian. Yeah,
yeah,
and it's like once in a while, it's time to step up.
You should
and go,
be proud. Actually,
we are.
Podcasts are the great new medium. Like one of the great, great things to come out of the internet era, in my opinion.
Well,
I
might say
one on the way here,
John Angus. We've been doing it. We started this in 2005. We did our very first podcast. We were early to the show, and then we've been doing 7 years of 4 or 5 days a week every year, 200 and some odd times a year. Most podcasts, they just do a new episode once in a while.
Yeah, yeah, and that's great, man.
So we're doing it every day.
And it's a fantastic, exciting new medium that people are
and
truly turned on by.
Yes, like we're turned on.
I love it. It's great.
Well, let me ask you, I mean, from that standpoint, you're promoting this album.
Yeah.
Are you as passionate now to get into radio stations to talk about it as maybe you once were?
I still love hearing the songs on the radio.
Right.
But there's something about podcast interviews that are just infinitely more fun and kind of relaxing and cool, and you can kind of say whatever and kind of, you know what I mean? You're not
absolutely,
you know, I still love going to the radio, but it's like you get like 30 seconds in between things to just say something really quick.
Well, I'm sure, like, you know? After this interview today, because I'm sure it will be scintillating.
Yeah.
Even though you're not performing
it's
live.
It's already scintillating.
No, it is. I think so.
The way people listen to this podcast, they're more likely to come away and go, oh, I'm going to check that album out.
Yeah.
Because they've heard you guys.
I agree.
Talk about the album and what you're all about.
I think it's more effective for discovery in that way. You know, like, because you get to really speak your mind and people get a sense of who you are, as opposed to, like, dishing out a soundbite between ads.
It's more natural, authentic. It's actually happening. You know, when we screw up or something, you know, making things are go off the rails, people hear it. You know, I'm going to tell you a couple quick stories. So we used to be the morning show on The Edge for years.
Right.
Edge 102.
So what, till what year?
We were there from 1989 to 2001.
Okay, so
well, the planes
before.
Hit the building.
Yeah.
We left.
And then we said, okay, we're out.
It was just before we got started getting played on The Edge
around
2003.
But I remember Humble and Fred from The Edge 102, though. So when we first
we were living
We were huge.
Yeah.
We were...
Still
well,
are.
We
evidently
really
still
well.
Are.
Yeah.
But my point is, we used to play 6 songs an hour.
Right.
And then we would get a parade of these artists. Like, we had the Foo Fighters on. We had Chris Martin and
Coldplay.
On.
Yeah.
And we would literally do this. Hey, welcome to the show, Dave Grohl. What do you want to tell us about? New song. Boom, boom. 4 minutes and done.
Yeah.
And we had this discussion with our boss all the time. We'd say, listen, if we have... Don't you think it would be more interesting to the audience to hear... I don't know. What did we ask for? 10 minutes? 8 minutes?
Yeah.
With Dave Grohl?
Yeah, talk about some Nirvana stories
you'd think
or
that,
something.
And he was like, they were adamant. We needed to get that song count in.
Right.
And we're talking, we used to have the guys from Slowin' On, the Bare Naked Ladies, all these bands.
Legendary.
And we would have 4 minutes to 5 minutes to pump up your stuff, and then you're gone.
Yeah.
And now with this world of podcasting, you know, you could be here for hours.
But yeah. It's the other edge.
Well, we plan on being here all day.
Oh, you hope
it's
so.
The other edge of the attention economy, where everybody thinks our attention spans are getting smaller and smaller because we're constantly blasted with information from our screens. The yeah. other edge of that sword is you can go deeper than ever if you really want to, and you can sit through an hour and a half interview
if you want to
somebody you love.
But the key is too, you have a pause switch, right?
Yeah.
Where you can listen. If
exactly.
you want little bites, you can listen to one podcast in bites.
Yeah.
Right. A lot of people listen half to work and the other half coming home.
Yeah, I do that too.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that. I've been listening to this podcast.
Everything
recently.
I say is interesting.
It's interesting. Interesting.
Which one's humble?
It doesn't matter.
I can't tell.
So I'm listening to this thing called Origins.
I find you have a bit of a James Caan kind of vibe going on.
I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Not Larry David?
No, Sonny. No. Godfather. Because,
yeah.
Which one was Sonny? James Sonny.
I love that. Yeah.
Sonny. The Godfather is like my favorite movie of
is
all
it?
Time.
Mine too.
And just, I was just like,
by the way, before I forget.
Like getting a Sonny vibe.
You live in the city?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
They're showing The Godfather at
Where?
The Fox Theater
okay.
in the
cool.
East End.
Awesome.
And, you should go online and get. I've never seen it on the big screen, and I bought
me
a couple
neither,
tickets
neither.
For me and my daughter.
September 20th.
Although we did have a projector in that one home we rented in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
We were making our third record, and the guy owned a projector. We like Airbnb'd a house in the very early days of that thing or whatever sublet. And he had a projector in one movie. Actually, he had the trilogy.
Yeah, no, he had both.
And we watched Godfather every day when we got home from the studio on the. Like wall
Amazing.
Of his house at
cool.
like 2 in the morning.
TheTruesMusic.com. The Colin and the John are here to talk
yes,
about this new
John.
Record. And how? So you're having a you have a almost a 4 year old and a
yeah.
new baby.
Yeah, I have a 4 year old and a 6 month old.
Girls, boys,
two boys.
Ah,
yeah. So
yeah.
right around the time we were promoting our last like full length release, I had my older son Elliot and. I wasn't able to do any of this stuff. I wasn't able to do any of the press, but yeah. Isaac's a little older than Elliot was.
Great names, by the way.
I don't have any kids, just so
Elliot.
I could do more press. So I just said, just
give me more.
It's either press or kids.
Yeah.
So I said press.
Yeah, what do you...
this is his baby.
Yeah.
Now, you guys are brothers, I understand.
Yeah.
So stupid.
So you guys are brothers.
We are brothers.
We're the worst music interviewers.
No, I love it.
No, ask us... You know what? I'll ask the next question. Do we fight on the road?
Yeah.
That's the next question that follows logically.
No, actually,
are you guys like the Gallaghers or the Robinsons or the Davies Brothers or the...
See, I was going to ask the four-year-old, do you sing him to sleep every night?
He's actually an incredible drummer.
Uh-huh.
The four-year-old?
He's incredible talent.
We were talking, he's...
And I'm not just saying that because I'm like a proud uncle. He's like, because we wrote most of our new record in my brother's basement, he'd always be hanging out, and then eventually he just started playing music,
Isn't
playing
that
drums,
weird, eh?
Writing tunes, singing
And it's
songs.
Funny because like when he's 2 and 3 years old, grown ass men retreat into the basement and... mess around from the upstairs is what it sounds like. We're messing around for 3 or 4 hours at a time.
Just
we're trying
playing.
A riff and we're sort of like
acting like
you sort of mantra a new song. You go over and over and over and over and it seems insane to anybody listening in. But to him, he grew up in a house where that's going on downstairs. So he habitually makes up a song about what's going on in his day. He'll be like, breakfast time, going to eat my breakfast time. Because it doesn't seem insane to just make
so
up a song.
So does the new record feature breakfast time as a hidden track?
No, but I have robbed little melodies off him because I'm not sure where he gets them. And he'll be walking around the house going, da-da-da-da-da-da. And I'll be like, whoa, I don't know what that is, but I'm going to like take it and twist it here and there.
Is the mother musical as well?
My wife is extremely passionate about music. She never played music, but she has really good taste in that.
But you know,
music.
It's interesting. They, you know, when my daughters were younger, people have, you know, they have that conversation about nature versus nurture. Like both of our sets of children grew up around this business, and grew up around comedy and their dads having fun, and you know, both of my kids have ended up sort of in and around the business.
Yeah.
It's just kind of what you're exposed to, and
it's not unusual. It's it's the norm.
It's what you know.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, a lot of my daughter's friends, their dads go off and their moms go off to work in some place. Whereas they would come see us, and
almost to a detriment, because they would come and see me work, and it was like, this is work.
Right.
Yeah.
And like dad leaves and like he's home every morning by 10 o'clock and all he does is laugh and say stupid stuff.
I love it.
That's work.
Yeah.
Right?
Totally. Well,
you got to read the 4-hour work week, man.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about.
I love that book. I actually read his book, The 4-Hour Diet, but it's funny. It's like my daughters, you know, when we get something new, I'd say, girls, you know what paid for this? Fart jokes.
Fart jokes.
Yeah. I love that.
So the new record is called Vintage Love.
No, it's Singles Vintage Love. Civilian Airs is the name of the record.
I think I said that 10 minutes ago, but
you did.
It's okay.
What I was going to ask you about being brothers, because I've got two older brothers. Who's older here?
I'm older.
Not fighting on the road questions, but more about artistic direction.
Yeah.
Because in a band, there's always a, you know, somewhat a, there's a bit of a hierarchy. Obviously, the drummer, who cares?
Yeah.
But whenever, yeah, I guess bands just go through drummers. We had done some drummer humor during the break. But what is it? Is there ever a bit of tug of war in terms of I think this is the direction of this song, or no? I wrote it. I'm adamant it goes this way.
Yeah.
How's that for a music question?
I think so. It's a good one. I think we just want to make something good that we think is good, and sometimes like I'll come in with something that I think is completely done. And it's just not measuring up and for him. And then I'll be a little bit disappointed for a half an hour. And then I'll kind of see the light as I listen to some of the playback and stuff like that. Like, we'll just kind of mess with it. But I'll come in with things like I write every day when I'm home. I'm like, oh, I got this whole song. And then, you know, he'll say something like, well, there's only one memorable lyric. I'm like, ugh. But there's like,
because it's like
20
your,
verses.
It's like your baby.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, do I make fun of your kids?
Well, so yeah,
I
think there's two approaches. But then you do step back and realize, you know, it's don't get too precious. And it is about making whatever, you know, the best possible thing we can make.
Is it easier to hear it sucks? It doesn't measure up from your brother than it would a non-brother?
It's probably better to get it early on than to have everybody else think that. I don't know. Yeah. You don't want to live in your own bubble, but... It's a fine line because when you're creating and when you're writing, you can't edit. It's really important just to write. And you do have to have a little bit of delusions of grandeur. You have to think that what you're doing is worthwhile. Otherwise, you're not going to have the will or the discipline to sit down and do it, which is ultimately just the ultimate test. It's just having the energy and the willpower to sit down and believe that what you're making up out of your imagination is worthwhile. And then you go to that second level where people go, oh, I don't like it. It sucks or something. And then that can kind of...
It's a different approach.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if that was too long-winded.
No, I liked it. But we probably have a different...
Have you heard the record's called The Civilian Airs? I just remember that.
So this is a 13-song record, and our last one was 11 songs. And our last one was 4 years ago. So you might look at that and go like, well, they wrote 13 songs in 4 years. That's not very much. But really, we wrote like 300.
Yeah.
But there's... You know, if you're an artist like... Some artists, like Neil Young, for example, he's just like, no, I put everything out. I don't edit myself, and then every seven records you have one that you might like, but I like them all kind of thing. But then there's this other approach where you can refine it all. You can like sort of, and I think maybe that's where I come in the band dynamic a little bit, where it's like, you know.
Not everything's great.
Yeah, and like I think we kind of go more with that like approach where you can take a bit of this, and then Jack's got this riff, and you can put it all together, and you can have something even better. That's better
the
than,
kid gives
better than the sum of his parts. And the kid gives
and then we get a 3-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. And the 3-year-old gives us the melody.
If you could go right across this country now, and I'd say the majority of people that are into music or aware of
a thing called music, yes,
know who the Trues are.
Yeah.
That's got to be pretty cool.
It's good.
And how long has that been, do you think?
Since about the time I started noticing that people just knew us in general was like probably around 2004 after we had our first kind of big hit. But, you know, it still comes and goes. Like, especially now, it's very, like, you can go to certain pockets where people are like, know you so well. And then you go to another bar and they have no idea because they listen to something totally different. And that's part of the new world, right? That's not just one consolidated media kind of pushing your music.
Well, and also part of the new world, since the days of Us at the Edge, you know, bands would make a lot of money on the release of their music. And now, bands don't make much money on the release of their music. You make money on the promotion and road touring.
Yeah.
Is that true for the Trues?
Well, we've always been a live band. So, like, we've always... lots of touring has always been a big part of our lives. So it's not been like a culture shock to us. We never had like this moment where we remember the days where we just sat home and cashed
for sure.
Royalties.
Because when you were era, it's been about touring.
Yeah, well, it's always been
and
about
when
touring.
We, as the industry was collapsing, we were running into the basement. You know what I mean? Like, we were coming in the door as the whole industry was crumbling around us. So we didn't experience that sort of like sweet ride everybody talks about of the industry before. Yeah. So albums
we didn't feel the 90s thing.
Albums have always been like a lost leader. They're like your legacy for sure. They're your legacy because they're going to be around longer than you're able to tour. But they're also, you know, they're a reason to tour. You know what I mean?
Well, that's what I want to get to. So as you have had more success and to on the back of his question about when have you noticed people notice almost most across the country, you can go to a lot of places now and tour.
Yeah.
So, with a child and with your love of The Godfather, how do you?
Yes. What is your timing?
Well, you can bring The Godfather. The
yeah,
road.
Yeah.
It's easy, especially now.
But here's the thing.
He is
so,
a Godfather.
So, how many dates a year would you make your? Well, because that's where you make your living.
Yeah.
And answer two questions: How many dates, and are the places you play get bigger and bigger as you get more successful?
Yes. Less is more, I think, as you go along, especially in Canada. You can't, like, when we first started out, we were building, so we'd play 250 shows a year, and it was just insane. And I mean, it was,
but we were 20, fun 22 as hell. And 24,
yeah,
and
it was like, the best thing, you know, in the world. But it was, we couldn't do that right now, or we wouldn't want to do that right now. So we try to work smart. We have a really great agent and great management.
So
we
do 100 dates a year.
Yeah,
60 to
and probably even a little bit more with the record out. You know, but yeah, 60 to 100 dates a year,
and that is that's what feeds the family.
Yeah, and then the name of the game, especially as you go along and you get a bit more seasoned, you know, but you have to be ready. You know what I mean? You can't go out and play 60 to 100 shows a year playing like you're not playing very often. You have to be out there ready. So you have to get way better at all the other behind the scenes work, you know? And I heard this one story about Mick Jagger, and not comparing us to Mick Jagger, but I thought it was a great story. He was on vacation with Lenny Kravitz in the Bahamas or something, and they were hanging out making music, but they were in the middle of a tour stop, so they had a couple weeks off to hang out. And Lenny said every night before supper, Mick would go into the basement, turn on a live tape of the show from the tour, and do the show downstairs,
really?
Just in the basement to stay in shape. And he said, if I don't do this, I won't have it. So it's one thing to go out, and the less you go out, the bigger your crowds are going to be. Uh-huh. But you got to deliver, you know? So,
yeah, you know, the last time I saw you guys live was in a field in Bob Cajun, 2011.
Oh,
that show.
Yeah.
That was a great show.
Legendary show. Yeah, absolutely.
This is Humble and Fred.
We're going to hit pause on this wonderful interview. We've got more with The Trues, wonderful moments. I'm full of Pong on commentary and on music. The Trues are a very fun group of people. But first, on the Best of Humble and Fred, we're going to play some very fun and very intelligent messages.
You know, this was crazy. FYI MusicNews.ca. I have to mention it because shocking news yesterday. Leslie Soule, who was a big mover and shaker at City TV and that whole thing, I guess through the 80s and 90s, and his wife Terry Michael, who was a broadcaster here in Toronto. You worked with at Easy Rock and CKFM.
You know what I just realized now? She was in the building working at the Easy Rock, whatever it was called, when we were there doing the show. At 99.
Anyway, married couple, had moved to Mexico to retire, and the day before yesterday, I believe, if not yesterday, killed in a head-on car crash.
That's horrible.
No, I know. Just
brutal.
They were
just retired, recently retired.
Yeah, I would imagine, yes.
Oh, man, imagine.
Also, our buddy Pat Holiday, there's a nice salute to him.
Is there?
On FYIMusicNews.ca. Yeah. You might want to read that. He's a great guy. Big mover and shaker in radio programming in Canada. And great jock in his day. And again, we mentioned that Rick Hodge had retired. There's a nice piece on him. So a lot of stuff worth reading at FYIMusicNews.ca. And today's new track is Lou Phelps. Squeeze.
Ooh.
FYIMusicNews.ca.
This is Humble and Fred.
How much time do we have with The Trues? A couple more minutes?
All right. You talked about, Colin talked about being ready. That Jagger story is interesting. Yeah. You know, so if you're doing 60 to 100 dates,
yeah,
are you... do you do them in blocks? And so in between, do you rehearse? Are you still keeping your chops up?
That's the thing. Like, we all... I mean, I play every day. I'm sure the other guys do, too. We always get together and rehearse once or twice a week. And we're always just pushing forward, writing new stuff and, you know, making sure that when we get up there, we're as good and better than ever, you know? So, yeah.
And the strategy is you release this album.
Mm-hmm.
You hope enough people hear it or download it, so when you play it live, there's some familiarity? Or
absolutely.
How does that...
We have a fan base, right, which is great. And part of the whole thing is you got to super serve your base now. It's part of, like, the new paradigm. It's like people that are super
fans. Like Donald Trump, yeah.
I don't want to talk about him. But people that are your fans want more than ever and can get more than ever. This is part of the long-form thing we were talking about earlier. Like, now there's all kinds of things you can... give them access to.
Right.
So now more than ever, you can do all that stuff. But then what the big hope is, and the hope of people at our label and people at our management team, is to also do some growing. Because, yes, we've been around 15 years, but there's still people that don't know all our stuff and still people that we want to have hear our new stuff. So we make a record like Civilian Airs, hoping to make new fans. And, you know, I think it's a really strong record. It did take a long time to get there, to make it. But one of the reasons we took so long is we wanted it to be this good. We wanted to break new ground still.
Well, and as you say, you know, whether it's a band, a television show, a comedian, a radio show, we have access. You know, we used to get, I talked about the evolution of contact with our audience. It went from people wrote us letters to being, then it was emails, and now people will tweet and text us in real time.
Right. Yep.
When we're live, they can interact with us in a way that never was possible before.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, the good and bad.
Feedback's instant. Yeah, good and bad.
Good and bad.
Yeah. Mm. So when you write a political song on your new record, then all of a sudden people are literally telling, I don't want to hear this. Unfollow. You're never going to hear from me again. You just lost a fan.
Well, how much of that do you have?
A little bit.
Well, we released a political song as the first song off the record, and we experienced that right away. But
what politics?
It was a song called The New Us, and
it's about what Trump is.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Right. And it was just like we wrote it.
Oh, wait. Can I say that?
Yes, you can. Okay, we wrote it in like November when we were making the record. We wrote it in like an hour. We were just pissed. I mean, who isn't pissed off and who isn't frustrated? It was a bit of a knee-jerk reaction. I still like it. I'm proud of it. But it definitely created tension with some people.
Yeah, but it created. That's what's good about it.
Well, and that's not such a bad thing once in a while. Yeah. Shake up. You know?
And at the time, I mean, now everybody's kind of saying stuff, but I just felt like at the time everybody was kind of shell-shocked and no one was saying anything. And it was basically kind of inspired by the nonsense that went down in like Charlottesville in August. And that seems like a lifetime ago.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, August 2017, but there's been so much crazy stuff since then. And I remember, I thought I was never going to get crazier than that.
Well, I was going to say that. We have been talking about Trump for a couple years now. And every just when you think it can't get any weirder.
I know.
The New York Times comes up.
Yeah. I turned off. I'm on a media fast right now. I had to stop. It was causing too much anxiety.
No, I understand.
And it was wasting my life.
My wife and I have said that recently, that, you know, let's just not have this on in the evening.
Yeah.
Let's watch, you know,
paying attention,
a fix-it show.
Paying attention to him is giving him power. And I'm starting to think that, like, all these news media places, like even the left ones, like CNN and stuff, or the center-left ones, you know, this whole, like, righteous indignation that they're, I can't believe he did that. It's like, you're making so much money off this clown because everybody's tuning in to see what he's doing.
Well,
let's just ignore him.
The phrase I use is outrage as currency.
Exactly. Right. Excellent line.
Outrage is what the current currency. And by the way, speaking of turning things off, like literally for the entire summer until recently, I just kind of took a step back. I mean, we have to be aware.
You know, I hate to be the contrarian at the table, but he can get away with a lot in the dark, too.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
And the purpose of the media, unfortunately, is to get people aware of what's going on in the chambers of government.
I agree with that, but there's still way too much time to
There is too much
time. Plus, there's a fine line where you want to be informed. You can either back off completely or pick your spots because you want to be somewhat tuned in.
One, for our job, we need to be somewhat informed.
I was being overly... I was reading the news like 5 and 6 times a day, and it just was... It was like useless. Nothing was changing. It was only getting weirder, and you were just going down that wormhole. You know what I mean?
The backlash to the Trump song. Did you get any Americans, or do you have an American audience? Would say,
we've had
shut up, Canadian. It's not even business.
But I had a song. Like I wrote a song called "Gun Control" in 2007 after the Virginia Tech mass shooting. I mean,
that seems like hundreds of kids ago.
But Americans, we went down on tour in America. Opening for Ace Frehley from Kiss. So we were doing like all the House of Blues and we were getting like, it was big crowds and we were playing Gun Control and it was like not cool with those people. They were like, don't do this. We don't care what you think.
And how did that manifest? You? They actually said that to
you. Oh, yeah. People would come up to us in like the bathroom stalls after this.
Because I love y'all's band, but I don't want to hear none of that Gun Control no more.
Well, it is crazy. It's crazy to allow people to have firearms.
But
crazy.
By the way, back to the idea of...
That was my little
outrageous currency. It's not just the media. It's everybody. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons I took a step back from Facebook and all the other social media that we do as a show. I don't care. I care what he thinks. I respect his opinion on things. I might even care what you think. But I don't care what Buddy in the back rooms and some. I don't care what you think about anything.
And
really.
It drives me nuts. Like all these posts, like, okay, I just want to say something about this. It's like, well, no. Like, why? Like, why? You know? Like, what's the point?
I'll add this. I think discourse is essential.
Sure.
And we have to start talking to one another. We have to stop tweeting at one another. Right. I think everybody should go out and find a right wing, if you're lefty, find a right wing friend and talk it through.
I agree with that.
Or find a Democrat if you're a Republican, or find a Republican if you're a Democrat. Stop shutting yourself off in your ivory Twitter tower and shooting out these useless bullets of insults that you'd never say to anybody's face if you were ever confronted with them
anyway. It's like people that get behind the wheel of a car and turn into an ass. It's 10 times
like everybody.
Social media.
The truth, everybody. The truth. Hubblefriendsmusic.com. I think we had a great time. I think when we look back on this time, when we see each other again, we'll go, remember that time we had a good time?
Yeah, that's right. This
time.
Well, sure, I remember Humble and Fred. I mean, we used to hang out together. We laughed together. We played together. We bathed together, you know? Then I got transferred to medium security, and I've never seen neither of them since.
There's more fun and laughter coming up on The Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Hong. We've got more interviews, and we also have some more of those very fun chats. You're listening to The Best of Humble and Fred on air, online, and Philip Hong. I'll just tell you, coming up, it's getting explosive. Good morning, I'm Philip Hong, and welcome back to The Best of Humble and Fred. This is another one of our interesting jukebox episodes of The Best of Humble and Fred. We are featuring some wonderful moments, as well as interviews from well-known people. Let's just say that. We've got some wonderful moments from the archive. And one of those musical legends from Canada happens to be someone named Lee Aaron. You might remember her. She's a rock star. And in this segment, you're going to hear some pointed remarks, a fit of pique, and I think that's just the boys alone. We're going to hear more from her and from Humble and Fred. Now on The Best of Humble and Fred.
Phil, will you help Miss Aaron?
Get her headphones on and get her all set.
Lee looks fabulous. Doesn't Lee Aaron look fabulous?
Looks amazing.
Doesn't she?
Looks amazing.
Not that we judge people by looks, but you look marvelous.
No. A day.
Oh, please.
Seriously.
A day. It's unbelievable.
Smells good, too.
Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Love this woman.
I don't know what time you got up this morning, but it damn well included a bath or shower because you smell amazing. you do. Do you walk around going, I'm Lee Aaron. I smell good.
Oh, yeah, usually I do. Yeah. Actually, it was crazy. I got up at like 5:30, which was like 2:30 in the morning, Vancouver time. So I'm kind of like feeling a little spaced out.
Are you from Vancouver? Is that where you live?
I do now. Yeah.
Yeah. But you were here for a long time.
Well, Toronto was my home for the longest time.
When did you leave?
So, 95. I moved
out there. You were around for the early days of the Humble and Fred revolution.
Absolutely.
No, you weren't. You don't even know. Lee could care less. She's above us. She's at a different level.
Well, as far as where you lived, we know. I saw on the bio here you're going on the Brampton Walk of Fame or something.
Just added.
So did you grow up in Brampton?
Why Brampton? Why Brampton? Well, my dad got relocated back to Ontario from Winnipeg. I grew up in Winnipeg originally, and then I was relocated when I was about 9 years old. We came back, and they ended up buying a house there, and I went. So my sort of middle school and high school years were there, and I lived there. Gosh, I don't know until my mid to late 20s, and then So I've got some history.
Brampton
there.
Brampton. Yeah. Where exactly is the Brampton Walk of Fame or Hall of
Fame?
Right
in the downtown.
It's right next to the Mandarin. It's next to the world's biggest Mandarin.
Where is it?
It's right downtown in the main square.
Right.
In front of the historic Rose Theater. They've done a whole bunch of
very
nice.
Howard's
it's actually very, very beautiful. Mm-hmm. And
That area around the Rose Theater is pretty cool, actually. Yeah. It's sort of got a nice little downtown vibe to it. And By the way, are your headphones bothering you? You don't have to wear them if you don't want to.
No, I'm actually really good.
You're holding them like you're in a recording studio.
No experience doing that. So.
But that Walk of Fame, do you actually put your hands in the cement and all that?
No, but they I was so looking forward to that, like stepping in concrete. No, it is a plaque though, like an actual granite plaque with a star and your name on it, and it actually gets put into the sidewalk. So it's interesting. You get to be a permanent part of.
I love Brampton.
That's going to say Lee Aaron, what you don't know, and congratulations on your Brampton honor. Amazing. What Fred, I think, was thinking of
is he being facetious?
No.
That's
he said that with kind of like a little.
He's from Moose Jaw.
I'm from Moose Jaw.
Right? He's not in the Moose Jaw Walk of Fame.
Yeah, you're not on the Moose Jaw Walk of Fame.
There isn't any Moose Jaw Walk of Fame. But you, my friend, it's the oversight. Yes, and you know where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
Lee Aaron, now that you're on the Brampton Walk of Fame, do you have any sway with the committee that we can get a 30-year resident of
36.
Brampton, 36-year Fred Patterson. How is that not a part
of it?
You
know what?
Yeah.
I actually went, some of the high school alumni from Central Peel Secondary are on city council.
There you
so
go.
I am going to talk to them
Absolutely.
About you.
I
because,
think
you know, Scott Thompson. If Scott Thompson
What?
I've brought some attention to Brampton over the years through my time on major market radio.
I would like to be there.
How many
to
times
present?
How many times have we mentioned Brampton on our radio shows over the year?
Daily.
We made, remember Mayor Peter Robertson. I don't know if you remember him. We made him a star on our show. We called him Mayor Gump, of course, but
maybe that's why we're not being. Maybe.
That's
Maybe
why
that's
you don't
why.
Have your star, my friend.
We're not on the Brampton Wild
You're not
fame.
Sucking up enough.
Listen, I'm nowhere near. And you, as you pointed out, nobody in Moose Jaw knows me, but everybody in Brampton knows you.
Yeah.
And how it's this true. Oversight has happened. I will not stand for it. Not on my watch, sister. Lee Aaron, you grew up in Winnipeg, huh?
There's an interesting Winnipeg story.
I'm going to tell you, I grew up in Moose Jaw. My parents are from Winnipeg. I used to go there every summer. Love Winnipeg. Some of the most beautiful women, like yourself, in this Canada, have come from Winnipeg. What is the Winnipeg story, my friend?
Well, I moved there when I was two to Transcona.
Just in like 75.
Yeah, sort of.
Yeah, like, in 1975 kind of, when you were two.
Transcona, does that ring a bell, Howard?
I'm not sure. Oh. Yeah, sort of.
You know, well, it was just sort of the suburb. I guess it's all Winnipeg now. Mm-hmm. And we moved in, and we lived two doors down from Blair McLean, from McLean and McLean.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So it was quite common for Burton Cummings to come, and they'd be big, these sort of crazy big parties at their house and rehearsals, and they'd all, I know a few times I went over there in the morning, and Blair's wife said, you know, go down and wake Burton up. He's still sleeping on the couch. And, you know, a couple times we got a ride in his Jag. So it's sort of like this interesting Winnipeg guess who-ish kind of connection for me.
I'm not sure if you American listeners understand what's happening here. Lee Aaron, who for very many years was rocking it hardcore all across North America, were you one of the first, I would say along with Pat Benatar and people like that, Susie Quattro, one of those women singing sort of metal, but I'm saying this not, again, trying not to be chauvinistically, but it's sort of a man's genre of music. Ish
was
and what was your attraction to it? You know, because since a lot of those were sort of the hair metal bands, and then along came this beautiful, sweet, kind Lee Aaron from Manitoba. What attracted you to this music? Had you always loved that stuff?
No, actually, I grew up doing musical theater. But,
what?
I know, it's crazy.
The sun will come out.
Yeah! Tomorrow.
Did you really do musical theater? Come
on. I did. In fact, those are my Brampton roots. That's what they all remember me for there.
Did you go to Mayfield?
Central Peel Secondary. Oh, okay. But
so you were doing, you thought you were going to go kind of the Broadway route, singing in The King and I and playing Annie and stuff like that?
Well, I don't know about Annie, but but those were sort of my my Broadway-ish kind of roots were when I went into jazz later on.
What was your favorite musical growing up?
What was my favorite?
Yeah. Like, what did you sing around the house all the time?
Oh,
because I'm going to get you to sing it now, obviously.
You know, I don't know that I actually had a favorite musical, but...
So you went from jazz and Broadway sort of standards to that, can you describe it as metal music, basically?
You know what? I think that's a bit of a misnomer for me, because I had one song called Metal Queen, but I think the bulk of my success was really built on the back of power pop.
Right.
Because Body Rock is a power pop song, what attracted me to that style of music was my dad arrived home one day with a trunk full of vinyl, because he worked at Humber College and they were changing formats, and they were getting rid of their vinyl library. And in that stack of vinyl, besides finding like Fleetwood Mac and Elton John and David Bowie and all this really cool stuff, I found one of the very first Runaways records, and also the first two Heart albums, Dreamboat Annie and Little Queen. And I was just blown away. I was like, wow, here are these women. Well, especially Heart, I would say, who are making, writing their own songs. They play instruments. They write, make the cool music. It's aggressive. They're not trading on their sexuality. And I was really attracted to that. And I thought, that is what, that just resonated with me in a big way.
How old were you at the time? Were you in your late teens?
I was about 15 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that sort of changed your musical direction. And see, it's funny you mentioned Heart, because I overlooked that. Anna Nancy Wilson have some great sort of power rock pop music.
They're, to me, they're still, I think I spent half of my career trying to be as cool as those girls.
And they can sing like, they're all
amazing,
great singers.
Still.
Yeah.
You are.
They are.
You are as cool as...
How old were you when you first, you got your first radio airplay?
19. Yeah. Yeah, I wrote and recorded my first album at 19, and that is when...
Was that, were you still in Winnipeg?
No.
No, no, this
oh, you were here.
I was in Brampton.
Oh, right. I'm sorry. Right.
Because you used to play around Brampton. You played in Spanky's a couple of times. You remember
oh, yeah.
That?
There was
no,
a
I know.
Few. In
I remember
fact,
that.
We were, me and some of the city councilors were reminiscing about the cool nightclubs. There was Hot Rocks and Spanky's and... Stars.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Well, I remember them
I'm
all.
I'm trying to think of what else.
Well, when we first started, well, he'd worked there for years, but when we first started our show in 1989, it was above what I guess was Spanky's.
Spanky's, yeah.
On Kennedy Road.
That's where CFNY was.
That's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What station was it, since I'm on the back of Fred's question about your age, what was the first station in Toronto that you heard a Lee Aaron song on? Do you remember?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So you're driving. Were you? Was it a surprise, or did you know? Oh, hey, Lee, they're going to play your song.
No, it was a surprise, and it was. You
did
know,
you just about yourself?
I can't imagine that.
No, but you might have.
Yeah. I'm at the age now. I might just now for no reason.
That is a Band-Aid, by the way. Yeah. Glasses.
That just happened.
I was wondering about that.
I'm now Urkling. That's why I love that. I'm going to use that as a verb.
I just fixed mine with gaffer tape. You know, it's much better. It fixes everything.
It just happened. Okay.
Yeah, so
I'm going to keep telling people that for months. This just happened. I just put it on. Was that an exciting moment? I always imagine for an artist, it must be.
It's totally exciting. I mean, because that's, I mean, when I was a young girl growing up in Brampton, we're plugging Brampton big today. Mm-hmm. You know, that was, to me, I thought, you know, the epitome of being a huge star was to play the Gasworks on Yonge Street.
Sure.
Right? And when, you know, to get any radio play, because that was what we all listened to.
Oh, sure.
And so the first time I heard a Lee Aaron song from my first album, I think it was Under Your Spell from the first album, I was just like, oh my gosh, I got to call my mom. I'm on the radio, you know? So it was very thrilling.
There's another great reference for people that grew up here in the 70s and 80s, the Gasworks. Wow. Many a night there, I couldn't feel my head.
Mm-hmm. Did you drink to excess?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did you rock out to the sounds of Lee Aaron? Mm-hmm.
In fact, you get so drunk there sometimes because you could feel the...
Because they served those quart bottles.
Yes,
remember,
the quart
they didn't
bottles.
Even serve normal bottles of beer. It was like they served quarts of beer. It was ridiculous.
And the band would start and the beer would jiggle inside your body. And it wasn't a good thing, you know.
Yeah, it's that kind of drunk where you finally get into a cab later and you realize it's the first time it's been quiet in your head for like four hours.
And then you go home
and just like, okay, you can still hear the music and you're like, I'm not sure anymore. And then you realize how drunk you are.
Then you get in bed and your ears ring.
Yeah.
Until you pass out. Yeah.
Until you pass out and you wake up in a pool of your own sweat, possibly bleeding from who knows where. That's about Lee Aaron.
This is Humble and Fred.
There's more with the venerable Canadian rock deity Lee Aaron coming up. You're listening to the best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Hong. First, a couple of deities in the form of messages.
Spearhead Brewing Company, Fred Mann.
Located in Kingston, Ontario. Hey, try the Spearhead Hawaiian Pale Ale. And you know, it sounds summery, but it's available all year round. It's bold, a 6%er. This West Coast Pale Ale brewed Hawaiian style with pineapple, naturally carbonated, unfiltered, and dry hop to provide a delicate carbonation and complex flavor. Listen, when you're talking about these craft breweries nowadays, you have to describe them in such a way because people are becoming so into it.
So discerning
when it comes to their brew. That's important.
Yeah.
So Spearhead Brewing Company out of Kingston, Ontario, LCBO, select beer stores, give their West Coast Pale Ale, Hawaiian Pale Ale, a try.
Let's talk about our friend, the retirement Sherpa. If you're one of those people that is, you know, looking for financial stability into your retirement years. Tim Niblett is the man. Why? Because he's a portfolio manager, and Raymond James is a member of the
Canadian Investors Protection Fund. Last week when he was in, our fine friend, Mr. Sherps, he talked about lots of stuff about, hey, how about property? Could that be part of your financial future? You know, buy a second property, rent it out. How about something in Florida or Europe or some other place? Just add to your personal portfolio. The cost of living, health care, weather, leisure, language, safety, it's all part of your plan for the future on how you want to retire and at what level, what is good for you. If you need more information and you want a guy to help you through all these questions, retirementsherpa.ca, Tim Niblett. He's a winner. He's a winner.
This is Humble and Fred.
Lee Aaron, did you put sort of performing on hold for a few years to have babies?
Yeah.
How many babies do you have?
I have two.
How old are these babies now?
They are, believe it or not, 10 and 12.
Come on.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So
are they girls or boys?
I have, my little girl is 12 and my son is 10.
Yeah, that's so good. That's the way to do it.
What took you to the West Coast? Love?
Love? Mm-hmm. Yes and no. I actually did move out there for a man, but I ended up not staying with that man, and I met somebody else and got married, and that's who I have my
family
with now.
That's who's your baby daddy?
Mm-hmm. My baby daddy. Okay. Wow. You guys. No, he's my husband. He's awesome.
Lee, you have to understand. Whatever
no,
comes,
I do understand.
Whatever comes out of our mouth, it's just it's nonsense.
Like, oh, by the way, man has no filters.
I do. I have a couple filters, but not very many.
Was in question
many.
At all.
They're all on his glasses.
Lee, so for a few years, you put your career on hold. You did the mom. You're doing the mom thing. You became a mother. It's the most important job in the world. Really.
Way harder. Way, way harder than being a rock star.
But do you think it's the most important job in the world?
It is.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I've had this debate too many times.
Have you?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Why? So if you have a problem with your brain, you're going to call your mom? No, you're going to call a brain surgeon, Lee.
Okay.
Anyway. That's just an old bit.
It's a sore spot with you.
It's a sore spot with me. But let's talk about you, Lee Aaron. Now, how many years did you put your Lee Aaroning on hold, and now you're coming out with some new music?
For probably, a decade. I haven't released an album since 2004. And then so 2016, of course, brings the new album. So I guess 12 years from I took a hiatus from writing and recording.
Did you do any performing, like going, because I know if you love jazz and singing, did you ever just drop in someplace and do a little set of just you and a guitar, James Taylor styles, maybe? I don't know.
Not just dropping in and doing a set, but I did a handful of performances every year, even during that time when I had my kids. It's this whole different ballgame when you're writing and recording an album. It just takes way more focused, intense amount of time. It's like writing a book, right? It's compiling a body of work, right? Mm-hmm. But it was easy for me to drop in and do a handful of shows a year. So I still continue to perform, but not tour.
The Lee Aaron brand, was it national or more regional? So did they know you in BC? Okay.
Oh, Lee Aaron is for sure national. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a weird question. Is that a question?
Yes, it was. No, I you more popular in Ontario, but did they know you across the country?
Interestingly Body Rock, when it came out, was outselling Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation in BC. That was one of my territories that we sold very, very well in Canada during that time. So,
frankly, I can't believe you asked that question. Because I got no filters. But let's just...
I'm never coming back on the show.
People say that, Lee. A lot of people say that.
He's a provoker, isn't he?
I'm
a dirty, rotten provoker.
I would definitely agree that everybody in Canada knows you. Any American listeners that might not know this, you were like the queen of our MTV, which is Much Music, for anyone who doesn't know that that's listening. Like the queen of Much Music. I mean, you were every girl wanted to be you. Including me.
Yes, and as a dirty, rotten provoker, or provocateur. I would like to ask about the new record, which is called Fire and Gasoline. I guess the best way to put this is, if you liked Lee Aaron in the 80s and 90s, will this resonate with fans? Will this be like, oh, what we expect from Lee Aaron?
Oh, no, it's a country record. I'm kidding.
You dirty, rotten provocateur. Don't come into my house here. So is it Lee Aaron music?
Absolutely. It's a rock record. When I say rock, I don't mean, you know, it's not, how do I explain it? I would say it has is reminiscent of the body rock era, but it's not hair metal. It's got big guitars, but I think I've been able to take all of those influences that I've had over the years, especially some of those jazz and blues influences, and bring them forward and incorporate them into an album that I think has, it's just got more maturity, and it's got some definitely more of a soulful rock vibe than I think than my former work.
What do the babies think of when they hear Mummy? Like, have you ever done that? Put on a video and said, "Here, this is Mummy when I was younger." I mean, we all did that with our kids.
Well, I got to tell you a funny story. My daughter came home in about grade 4, and she said, "Oh, Mom, there's this kid in my class named Jaden, and he came and he said that his mom had showed him this cool video of you, and there's, like, you know, a big robot thing and laser beams." And I'm thinking, what is she talking about? It must be the Metal Queen video. So I sat her down on my knee, and I go to YouTube, and I find it. And, like, literally, she got about 30 seconds in. She's like, "That's it?" And she just, so like, and I'm funny. Like, you know, you just cannot compete with modern technology and CGI. And
yeah, for sure.
She was just like, "Really? That so giant wobbly turtle thing? That's the robot they're talking about?"
On that point of technology, I mean, you've been out of it more or less for 10 years. A lot's changed in the past 10 years as far as distribution and how you're going to get it out there.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that's a great question.
That
one has a question mark on the end of it as well.
Yeah. Yes. I think that makes up for his regional question. What do you think?
Well, the whole way that music is recorded and delivered to the public is different. And I enjoy certain aspects of that. Mm-hmm. It's really nice with digital technology to be able to, like, my one of my co-writers and guitarist Sean Kelly is in Toronto and I'm in Vancouver, and we can, you know, bounce ideas back and forth easily and throw tracks on, and it's far easier than it used to be. But I wanted to record a real album with real musicians live off the floor, so I actually flew my band out to Vancouver, and we did record, go into the old Little Mountain Sound, and so this album actually is recorded in an organic fashion, but, you know, obviously it's available in all the kind of outlets that
I was going to ask you that. So you recorded, the recording, what you did is you took a sort of an old-fashioned recording, sort of an original recording method, but what about the distribution? I think what we're talking about is now it's not, you know, people aren't selling units. Other than Adele, not very many people are selling pieces of, you know, vinyl or digital. How do you distribute it? I mean, is it on your website? Is it on iTunes? All those things?
It's all those things. I got a distribution deal with ILS Universal, and so if you go to any of the Amazons, it's available there.
Nice.
There are physical copies available in the stores, and I'm racked right beside Adele because it's an A name.
That's
just,
great.
Just incidentally. And yes, go
and
ahead.
Once it takes hold and becomes popular, are you prepared to start doing the things back and right across the country and
touring?
Yeah, well,
touring,
you know,
and
those
all
things.
That.
What I've been doing these days, which works for my family life, is pockets of dates. Mm-hmm. So rather than going, okay, I'm going away for a month and I'm going to go do a big tour, it's like, okay, let's go do Ontario right now. And we're going to do Ottawa, London, Toronto, or now we're going to do the East Coast. And so that's sort of been working really, really well. But we've got some European interest right now. I'm flying over there in October to do Rockingham, which is a big festival Nottingham. And
the world needs more Lee Aaron.
Lee Aaron will be at the Rock Pile, Toronto's Rock Pile. Of course, after this pile, everything is going to be up for her. She's like, okay, I got the Humble and Fred appearance out of the way. Now let's get on to real journalists.
I did the pile the day before I did the Rock Pile.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. I did the pile of nonsense, so now I'm doing the Rock Pile.
Yeah.
Pile, Rock Pile. Hey, listen, I hope you had a nice time.
It was fun and interesting.
Yeah, well, you know, we're not everyone's cup of tea.
Are you gonna do a little reminiscing tour of Brampton today? Just hang around and look at all the old spots and
stuff? I did that last weekend, actually. Nice. I was there. Yeah, I got to photograph my old...
You wanted to drop by and maybe look at your sod?
Yeah.
He's done a great landscaping job. Really is something else. I was over there the other day. Very impressive. Lee Aaron, where do people go? They go to leeaaron.com, I'm assuming. Yep, Lee Aaron. That's LEEAARON. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
good
Lee
Lord.
Aaron.
Lee Aaron.
And come on, I survived. Next time you do a pocket of Ontario, we'd love to have you back in.
Yeah, after the show, Fred and I are doing a PETA pocket tour.
We should get one. We should get one together.
You guys should get one together.
Where do you go? This is Humble and Fred.
I'm Philip Hong. We've got more fun moments coming up on The Best of Humble and Fred. A chat, a conversation, one or two coming up. You're listening to The Best of Humble and Fred on air, online, and as always, thank you. Welcome back. You're listening to The Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Hong, and I am excited to present to you two more fascinating conversational segments on The Best of Humble and Fred. This comes from our archive, our miscellaneous Humble and Fred segment archive. We are tracking down some of the Humble and Fred historical moments, and we're going to start with a segment about one of those car accidents that Howard went through, an eventful moment now on The Best of Humble and Fred, as well as a collision countdown.
So here's something that's happened now three times in 13 months. And people have got to stop hitting me with their cars.
No.
What?
People?
Again?
Yes. A year ago, last month, July, I got hit in the junction.
Yes.
In Toronto. That was the story of the young woman who hit me and then came out and said I was old enough to be your grandfather.
Hey, Grandpa.
That was also where Spencer bailed on the accident and asked me for money for a taxi. But just to give you that perspective. Not my fault. No fault of my own. Insurance covered it. And the car had $7,000 worth of damage. They did not write the car off. Then this past winter, February, I guess.
Around
something like that.
Yeah.
Same car that was in the accident with Spencer. I'm at a light, fully stopped, in downtown Toronto, and a car backed into me, wrote the car off. Remember that car? That was the BMW?
Mm-hmm.
Remember the accident?
Right.
It was about $7,000 or $8,000 worth of damage, and the insurance thought, well, based on what the car is worth, they just gave me a check, and it was great. Everything worked out fantastic, right?
Yes.
But you know what it's like. You go through the accident. It's all this process, you know, the reporting center, and then the collision center, and then the insurance, and the rental car.
The adjusters and everyone.
Yesterday, driving into the Oakville area, I'm on my way to Glen Abbey to play golf in the afternoon, little mini event I was in, and, you know, on those traffic signs on the highways here, you'll see, you know, hey, up ahead is an accident, or up ahead is a delay. So I see, as always, if you're heading west into Oakville, Burlington, very often west of Ford Drive, it becomes bottlenecked.
Right. So there's electronic signs that tell you how far.
So I used to live in the area. I know this as a fact. So I'm thinking, okay, I'll just get off at Ford Drive, kind of where I used to live, and then just take Upper Middle Road to Glen Abbey. So I come down the ramp at Ford Drive, and I stop at the light. Stop. And a guy bangs in the back of my car. And it's the bumper, it's the light, it's the trunk. And I just sat there for a second, you know, because I, as volatile as you think I am, I just sat there and I was like, first of all, I got a little bit hurt, to be honest with you. He hit me hard enough. You know, like you can almost tell instantly you're getting like...
Yeah. Trauma.
No, my neck.
Oh, you're being whiplash, basically.
Yeah. Because unlike the guy that backed into me, this guy hit me pretty hard. You'll see it. I just sat there. He got out of his car, and we pulled over. But I just sat there for a second, and I thought, you know, I just don't have the time right now. Because I know all the steps that are going to have to happen now in the next couple of days to get all that stuff. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know what else I can do.
What did he say? Like, he said, if you were stopped,
you know what he said to me?
Was he texting or something?
He said, Well, what happened was, you know, you come off the ramp. Right. We're all going ramp speed, and we're slowing down. Mm-hmm. And I looked up ahead. The light was green, or where the light was yellow. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to try that. Mm-hmm. And I stopped. Mm-hmm. I guess he looked up, didn't think of it. He said to me, well, I didn't think you were going to stop. And I said to him, he said, I didn't think you were going to stop. And I said it in a non-dicky way, but I just said, I was at a red light. What else would that guy was going to do? You know, what was I supposed to do?
Yeah.
I said, well, I was stopped because the light was red. Uh-huh. And then he was like, oh, when, you know, he's driving a, I got his car, he owns like a landscaping thing, and he was driving a landscaping flatbed.
Oh.
So
in a hurry to get summary.
Yeah. And he said, oh, this is a drag, man, and one of my other trucks is already in a thing. He said, I love this. He goes, you know, because everyone wants to do this to avoid insurance. He goes, oh, you know, is there any way, you know, maybe I could just get it fixed for you. I went, yeah, you could do that, but then what am I going to drive? Mm-hmm. What do I drive then, sir?
Yeah.
And, you know, I said, we got to go through insurance because, you know, we just do. Anyway, so I called my insurance agent, you know, and she's like, well, hello.
Howard.
Yeah. Nice to hear from you.
It's not my fault. It's not going to count against me. But it's the third time in 13 months I've had somebody hit me. Mm-hmm. You know, I said, Rachel, I said, I haven't had a moving violation. They're all just sitting violations. They just sit there and I get violated. It's a sitting violation.
What about
Fred?
The 1-2? There was one that you did rear end somebody, right? That was within recent history.
No, that was 4 or 5 years ago. That was during that ice storm.
Okay, but it takes 6 years for a.
Yeah, but that one, that was the only one against me.
No, my point is, and believe me, because I'm going through the same thing. I had two people hit me in the past year, and then Delise ran into the back of somebody. Mm-hmm. And even though you like to think it's not your fault, believe me, within your insurance company, you're flagged a bit because it's all based on probability.
Hang on 1 second there, friend, man. We got a faulty. Go ahead, cop talk.
Hello, testing, testing.
Well, whatever it is, I don't think I'm going to get...
No, I understand. But the thing is, you still don't want them because they look at you, even though it's not your fault. Mm-hmm. Why are these incidents happening to you? Where are you driving? How often are you driving? And so on. I get it. It's just it's a drag on so many levels. Because the minute you start talking to your insurance company, it's just not good, whether it's your fault or not. Anyway, and it's like that with house insurance and everything else.
Oh, yes.
So...
Well, lucky me, because it's happened now 3 times, and when it happened yesterday afternoon, I just
the car is drivable though.
Yeah,
so all the rear lights work and
everything works,
right?
And so what I'm going to do, because I'm hoping to play in our little ladies' day today with Timmy, Tim Niblett. No, you're not playing. Okay. But I'm going to go to the report. The nice thing is all of it's just a series of phone calls and processes. But the good thing was it happened in Oakville. Now, the last one I did happened in Toronto, but I got it sourced
in
Oakville.
Assigned, yeah.
Yeah, I got the Toronto police to allow me to go to Oakville where the reporting center is. There's just nobody there. So I'm going to go to the reporting center today and get that part done. Then I'll go to the collision thing tomorrow and get all that processed.
You don't really have to go to the collision center. I did. Delise didn't, this last one. Because the thing is, he rear-ended you. There's not much question. The adjusters see. You know, you get his insurance, and the damage is to the back of your car. It's like...
Well, what I'll do is I'll call... The insurance lady was... It was the end of the day yesterday. This happened like 3:30. So I said, let me call you after I finish the show, and we can figure out what I'm going to do. So maybe I don't need to go have the well, they're going to tell me. Because we might... The insurance might need the official police report to process the claim. That might be what they need.
Well, I just went through it, and they didn't.
Okay.
I mean, the thing is, if the damage is to the back of your car, it's like with Delise's recently, it was to the front of her bumper and the back of the other guy's car.
Right.
So there was no dispute. If I go to the reporting center, what am I going to say? It's his fault he backed into her. Like, you know what I mean? If you're just an honest person, there's not really any dispute. And if it's to the back of your car and you have his insurance, it's like they're going to call him and say, what happened? He's going to say, well, he should have stopped. Well, that doesn't fly.
I mean, do what they say. No, I just went that. Through no, the whole yeah. process and didn't even go to the report.
That would save me a couple hours of dicking around today because that collision center is right over here.
Now, when I went to the collision center, remember last September when we went because I was stopped. A woman hit me and pushed me into the front of another guy. Yeah. That needed some explanation.
Oh, for sure.
Yes.
But if I don't have to go to the reporting center, then I can just go to the collision thing over here and I'll get a new car. Because they'll just they bring the rental car over. As far as the insurance goes, you're probably right. This is going to impact me, and that's a drag too. I should sue the guy. No, because I got sued.
No, I know.
I got sued by the woman that hit me.
Yeah, sue the guy for whiplash.
But then I have to stop golfing.
here's another issue, Howard. Just so you know, Delisa's car isn't. Can't go into the body shop till August 27th. And we found this in more than one place because it's summer and a lot of guys are on holidays and it's backlogged and summer accidents. If your car is drivable, you're not eligible for a rental car until it actually goes in for the work.
Understood.
Yeah.
Well, I'll get that done. Mm-hmm. But what do you think? You know, it's like and I it would be different if it were me not paying attention, or if all these accidents were happening and they were my fault, something I was affecting. But in two and a half of the cases, in the one case where the girl hit me, I was moving very slowly, but she came out and hit my car. Obviously, the second accident, I was parked. The guy backed into me. This one, I was stopped, and the guy rear-ended me.
You can't be faulted for following the law.
So I don't... This is rhetorical, but I was wondering to myself, like, I don't know what else I can do. But these are all being done by people, I don't know, like, you know, should I get my license changed? Just don't hit me. Just stop hitting me, please.
Mm-hmm.
Be aware. Mm-hmm. I'm quite hittable.
I got my license in 1974, or whatever it was. And until that mishap in 2012 on the 401 where Dave saved my life.
Oh, yes, yes, the tractor trailer.
I had never been in a car, driven a car, or actually been the passenger of a car that actually collided with another car. From 1974 to 2012. And then since then, same thing.
Calamity.
Philadelphia guy bangs into me. Last, you know, September, a woman runs into me.
This is Humble and Fred.
We've got one more fascinating, timeless, miscellaneous Humble and Fred conversation. But first, I'm Philip Hong. You're listening to the best of Humble and Fred on air, online. We have a couple of very important messages.
Fred, why don't we talk a little bit about the insurance that helps so many Humble and Fred listeners, the Chamber Plan.
Yes, I'd be very happy to tell you about the Chamber Plan. Chamberplan.ca. Go there and you can get a free quote right away. If you have a small business, say 1 to 100 employees, and you've always been considering a benefits plan, you know, to give your employees more security, make them feel better about you, you can go to Chamberplan.ca, get that free quote. It's Canada's number one plan for small business. 30,000 Canadian businesses now part of it. It's been around for over 40 years, so it's very stable, to say the least. Also very simple to become involved. It's the smart way to go in employee relations. That's what I'm going to say. I mean, just think. You walk in today and you tell your employees they have benefits. Health and dental insurance. Other insurances as well. Chamberplan.ca.
Hey, more flexibility has been added to the data plans at GigSky. Go around the world like Pelé. If you went around the world, you could use your GigSky in so many places. North America and Europe. Regional plans now include more options, plus 1 gig and 2 gig data plans costing less than before, Phil.
Yeah, yes.
Going to Asia, are you?
Asia, yes.
We're working really hard to offer significant price cuts, more data, more plans. It's on the way. We've also, GigSky's also added and updated the plans for the Caribbean, Latin America, and Middle East Africa. To view the complete list of improved GigSky pricing, head to the website. What is the website, Phil? GigSky.com.
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 Visit the Humble and Fred website for a free sim.
All right.
Yeah.
This is Humble and Fred.
We've got time for one more quick segment. I'm Philip Hong on the Best of Humble and Fred. In this conversation, you're going to hear more about girlfriend Rachel comparing Etobicoke to a foreign country, as well as transgressions.
Good to be with you. We've gone over quite a bit. Did you see that story about the guy hanging on to his car on the DVP? That's awesome.
No.
Yeah, he did that.
What?
Some guy, road rage, and more of the Toronto. You know, it's hard to believe it doesn't happen more because this is a very big city and people are cramped and they're aggravated. And that 410 that you drive every day is bizarre. Mm. It really is. I was on it the other night coming home from dropping or getting the dog and... it's like 9:30 at night. It's packed, and people are driving super fast, and everyone seems aggravated.
The problem is the ones driving super slow.
Yeah. Mm.
There's a lot of nervous drivers on that 410. You almost wonder how they got their license.
Yeah. And what about your neighborhood? Do you live in the city?
I do. My street has become a haven for people learning how to drive.
Ah.
It's really fun.
Nice.
Especially people, Chinese people, for some reason. Like Chinese.
I'm sorry, you can't say that.
Yes, I can.
They're picking and choosing their test centers, right? They want to find the easiest.
Yes, I can.
No, because the
is it
it'll
because
be
you're a woman you're allowed to see race?
Yes, and also their signs are in Chinese, so
oh.
I'm pretty sure they're Chinese.
So they are Chinese, actual Chinese
yes.
people.
It's like Chinese, it's called like Chinese Driving
Chinese
Institute.
Driving
people. But it's yeah. in Chinese.
Oh, I
in the
signal.
Sign.
That's what we say. Signal is Chinese for signal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's a little.
Why don't you do it?
or why don't you? You only need. You Chinese. Or turn the signal off.
Yeah.
We get it. You're making a left turn around the planet.
You know what? I'm bad for that now.
Are you?
Well, yeah. If you know, you just change lanes if you don't right. go far enough for it to click back, right?
Right.
You got to do it yourself and off. And I'm like driving along. Why is that on?
What's that noise?
That
are
noise.
We on?
That's awesome. I was going to ask you something about. Oh yeah, here's the thing.
Yeah.
You've met girlfriend Rachel.
Uh huh. I miss her.
She's a good girl. She lives about 20 minutes from here, sort of nearer you.
Yeah,
she's quite close to you.
Same end of the city.
Same end of the city.
All that.
Well, I said to her, because we're having a brunch on Sunday with her brother and sister in law. They've lived all over the place, live in Europe and things, you know, Denmark and this, Geneva.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do. They're married, but they live apart.
What?
Because they're very, you know, bright globetrotters, and one lives in Geneva and the other one lives in Denmark, I
like
think.
Like forever?
Oh,
that's
yeah.
the forever plan?
Well, that's what they do, and they get together, you know, and when
and they're married?
Yeah. But that's not the story.
Children?
No.
No, okay. You couldn't have children under that structure.
That's not the story. The story is this. I said, so where do you want to have, you know, breakfast on Sunday?
Mm-hmm.
Or brunch? It's brunch.
Geneva.
Right.
Denmark.
And the point I'm getting at is, is your brother staying with you? She said, no, he's staying way out in, this is how she described it. He's staying way out in the West End. I go, what does that mean? She goes, well, you know, near Royal York. I go, that's where I live. And
exactly.
I said, is that how you describe where I live? You live way out in the West End? I'm sorry, am I not central hipster enough? I wanted to ask you, is this what you describe? What do you describe this end of Toronto?
Well, it's funny, right? I moved here right after soon after the amalgamation. And so it's interesting because people, they call it the Toronto suburbs or something. Like, it's part of Toronto, but it's the
suburbs.
Scarborough, Etobicoke, North York.
No, this is Toronto. It never used to be, per se.
Mm.
This used to be the borough of Etobicoke.
The city of Etobicoke.
Oh, borough.
Yeah. Well, they were boroughs, and then they had city designation. There was Scarborough, Etobicoke, North York, East York, York.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And then it all became just one big city.
Right.
What did they call that? The amalgamation.
Yeah,
amalgamation.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a name? The super city?
The
or
mega
the
city.
Mega city.
Mm-hmm.
Mega city. So that's snobby Toronto Rachel. So when you tell people where we are, how do you describe it? Oh, it's way out in, it's like in Vancouver.
Definitely don't do that with guests.
No.
We would not get any. I say, we're in Toronto. And then when we get them booked, I say, here's where in Toronto we are. Just so they don't go to
Way listen. Out yeah. in the West End is where she describes
but
where I live.
It's still Toronto.
It's still Toronto.
It's still Toronto.
Well, I'll tell you, because my doughy white guys that I hang out from Milton, this is Toronto. They would never.
Mm.
It's a big deal coming here.
Mm-hmm.
coming to Islington and the Queensway.
I actually think this area and those areas are the most exciting areas, right? They're the, you know, like New York, like the Lower East Side, for example. There was a time nobody would live there, and now that's a very cool place to be because it's
very exciting,
a little more affordable than the core.
Right, Howie? Very exciting around
here. It gets very exciting.
Uh-huh.
Very exciting around this hood.
So are you... Were you mad at her? Are you going to try and migrate inward?
Have you had a fight yet?
Runnymede?
Have you had a fight yet?
Okay, first of all, no. I'm answering Barker first.
All right.
Okay.
I did not get mad at her. I just find it funny because, you know, she's not from here. She's from Stratford. She's lived in Toronto a long time.
Right.
But it's just funny how we take on these attitudes. Right. Like, it's Toronto, but it's not Toronto enough. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I don't live right at, King and Spadina.
Young and man bun.
That's funny. What's your question, sir?
Have you had a fight yet?
Not really. No, not like...
No. She hasn't seen that side of you yet.
I don't have that side of me anymore. I barely do.
You had like...
Why'd you rub your breast when you...
Why did you smear that all over your boobs?
I barely liked that before, and he rubs his breast.
I'm not like that.
No, I don't have anything.
I don't have... I never... You know, it's funny, because in my last relationship, which was very chaotic and very... lots of fighting and lots of... lots of fighting... I sort of got, that was the end of it for me.
I can't imagine that.
Two things. I don't have that really in me anymore because I'm not being prompted. I'm not being pushed all the time. And she's not like that. She's very, I was telling our friend Bill Hertz, who I hung out with yesterday, because Rachel was doing a project this last winter. She was taking a course, and part of the course was to interview some people that were retired. And I put her on to Bill. Mm. So she had quite a talk with Bill, and Bill asked me about her. I said, she's so reasonable. I said, she's really smart, but she's very smart with me. And Bill said, what do you mean? I said, because she always errs on the side of, what would be the easiest for us?
Mm-hmm.
And subsequently, it's always easy on me.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
She always errs on the side of let's just take the route of least resistance so we don't fight.
What a wonderful story. I'm glad I asked that question.
How about you and
Dahl?
That
was well explained.
How about you and Dahl? Any fighting since something?
We never fought.
No, but I mean, in recent weeks when there's been something?
No. Unless I leave it laying around. Anyway, more on that later.
September 10th, it's all revealed. How about you and Marco?
I'm trying to think. We haven't had a... We have more, I'll say something, and then he'll take it in a way that's like, I never, so he gets upset, but I'm upset, but I'm not upset at him, but he'll get upset, you know what I mean? He'll read more into it. That's our path,
that
usually.
That sounds like us. Delise often says that I, you know what I mean? Like, I always... think it's against me or something.
Yeah, like I'll say something like, oh, probably, man, I should have made this choice. And and he'll be like, why didn't you? And I'm like, I listen to other people and I should have made this choice. And then he'll be like, I never told you to do that. You're acting like I told you to do that. And I'm like, not you, just life.
Well, it's hard not to take things personally from the person you're the closest to.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Right down to hanging a picture.
Because you think their comments are directed... about you, mm-hmm. when really, from what I've read, it's about them.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the poison we share with one another has nothing to do with you did something.
Mm-hmm.
It's something about what you did triggered something in me, and that's how it manifests itself. Believe me, I've studied this because it's my whole life. Taking things more personally than were meant for me.
Right.
But once you realize that, if you have a problem with
that's
something...
right.
But it's true. If you have a problem with something,
it's true about you.
Absolutely. Well, I know that.
I think the
point. You said it.
But
no, I'm just reinforcing it.
But let me reinforce this. Back to your reinforcement. What makes me happier now is I realize that sometimes I'll be reacting to something. I go, oh, hang on a second. That has nothing to do with me. Mm-hmm. And it's true. And as soon as you realize that, you go, oh, whew, shoulders feel lighter.
The opposite end of that, though, it can be detrimental, too, because I'm the opposite end of that, where I
I don't make it about anyone else. I feel like it's all because I'm a failure. You know what I mean? Yes. Like, this didn't happen because I'm not good enough. This didn't. So it all becomes.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah, it sucks.
But not uncommon.
But I don't take it out on anyone else. You know, I'm not screaming at anyone else. I internalize it, I guess.
The only even mildly whatever thing that's happened with Rachel and I is when she does that. She has taken on. She wants things to be, you know, great for us, and yeah. So she's, you know, she very good about planning, and she found the Airbnb in Victoria, and you know, had scoped out a couple cool places.
And I'd love that.
Oh, it's so good. And you
never
know,
had that.
And when something turns up, didn't turn out the way she wanted it, she felt bad.
Yeah,
but and I'm like, don't feel bad because I eat 7-Eleven chicken. Everything's great for me. You know, that's why I always assure her it's everything you do is great.
Mm-hmm. This is Humble and Fred.
Thanks so much for listening. I'm Philip Pong, and this edition of The Best of Humble and Fred is brought to you by HomegrownKits.ca, Strain Print, FYI Music News, The Retirement Sherpa, Spearhead Brewing Company, Gig Sky, and The Chambers Plan. And as always, we broadcast from the Humble and Fred National Broadcast Studio. We've got more on the way and online at HumbleandFredRadio.com.